Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Also, you can listen to today's program over the telephone or any portable listening device anywhere in North America and Canada. That number is 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. Today, we're going to learn about why eating nuts can help lower your risk of cancer. Great information on that coming, colorectal cancer, pancreatic cancers, but how a high fructose diet, according to the University of California, is going to slow recovery from any brain injury like a stroke or dementia, Alzheimer's, how selenium plus coenzyme Q10 supplementation reduce age-related increases in inflammation. That is terrific. That means it slows down the aging process. How berries enhance motor performance and improve cognition. That means everyone over the age of 25 should be using berries on a daily basis. This is from Tufts University Human Nutrition Center, plus a lot more, including why mammography screening is harmful, should be abandoned. Who's saying that? Someone in the health field? No. Published in the Royal Journal Society of Medicine by the Nordic Cochrane Center. That's the most distinguished group of independent scientists in the world. Also today, eye in the sky. 60 U.S. police departments have asked for drone certification, and they're arming the drones. Everything from pepper sprays to all forms of weapons, and these are going to be over our cities. My guest in the second part of our program today will be Dr. Mark Weisbrot, and from Washington, D.C. He is co-director with Dean Baker for the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington. We're going to take a look at what the so-called experts are getting wrong about the global economy, the demise of the Eurozone, and the shocking international failures of the International Monetary Fund. And I gave you part one of the economic bubble implosions that are going to be happening, I believe, over the next 5 years, and what it's going to mean to us. I began the other day by showing you which institutions are in debt, how much the debt was, and these are all public records, and what the likely outcome is going to be. I'm going to continue today because entire industries are going to be adversely affected, and people likely will not pay attention as a result. They may see a run on the banks, and the banks keeping their money, and when those banks go belly up, the people who will get all those savings and your pensions that are in those accounts will be the hedge funds and those who learned how to game the system. It's a unique concept that we're faced with, not trusting our banks. In fact, most people are not aware you're not earning any interest keeping your money in the bank. You're paying money to keep your money in the bank, and you're making negative interest, meaning you're losing money on your account. Then why keep it in there? So we'll discuss this in depth. I'm going to allow more time for this than a normal interview. Also today, I'm going to give you a clip from A Message to America from Black America. I think you'll find it important. Also, quote, I killed people in Gaza, most of whom didn't do anything to me. The shocking testimony from one Israeli soldier who spoke to an organization called Breaking the Silence. Also, would you know that there are over 1 million people in the streets this week in Italy protesting their austerity programs? No. It was nowhere in the American media. We'll play you a clip because we have a lot of people around the world, including in Italy. We want to show you what's going on. Also, President Obama just signed an anti-free speech bill. Did you hear about it? Probably not. So now you can be arrested as a felony, not a misdemeanor, if you are protesting anywhere where the president or the Secret Service says that you shouldn't be protesting. So the president, Secret Service, tells you where you're allowed to protest and where you're not allowed to protest. And you may be allowed to protest way away from where anything is happening. I'll give you a clip of that. As you see, we have a lot of issues, so let's begin. First up, every single day, I make sure I'm consuming some nuts. The best way of consuming nuts, the most powerful way, would be in organic, raw, nut seed, sprouted butters. Now, the word butter doesn't mean dairy butter. It just means it's creamed. It's been taken from a nut and simply pulverized. That's all it means. You're getting all the oils, and the oils are good for your heart and good for your muscles. They also are good for protein, terrific for fiber. In fact, there's nothing wrong with nuts. It's all good. You never hear of anyone getting a disease from eating a vegan, plant-based diet. You get a lot of diseases from a meat and dairy-based diet, saturated fat-based diet. And, of course, there are at least 11 good nuts to eat, and then all the seeds. So any combination of 2 to 3 ounces a day would be terrific for you. Here's the latest published in the Peer Review Journal Nutrition Reviews, a study done at both the Mayo Clinic and University of Minnesota, and as reported by Green Med Info. Now, it comes down to this. The medical industry is losing the cancer battle. And despite a 45-year multi-hundreds of billions of dollars war on cancer, the global burden of cancer is expected to rise by 50% in just the next 5 years. However, the good news is a handful of nuts a day could help protect you. That's correct. What they did was simple. They asked a question, do nuts, walnuts, almonds, macadamias, do they protect you against cancer? They conducted a meta-analysis, meaning multiple studies, 36 different studies, including 30,708 patients on the disease prevention powers of nuts. This included 16 cohort studies, along with 20 case-controlled studies. These are very detailed studies. The combined studies, which went up to 30 years, so they followed people from 4.6 to 30 years, compared eating nuts, and here's what they found. Here's the takeaway message. You have a 24% lower risk of colorectal cancer, 42% lower risk of endometrial cancer, 32% lower risk of pancreatic cancer. In addition, those eating more nuts had a 15% lower risk of general cancer overall. The authors found very persuasive evidence here. So it also found that nuts can help prevent gallstones and diverticulitis, improve sleep by boosting melatonin, protects bone health, and increases cognitive function. So if you have not been eating the nuts, and we're not talking about the dry, roasted, salted, you know, with the trans fats. We're talking about quality raw nuts. Now you know why you should have them. Now something you should not have is high fructose corn syrup. You get a lot of that in your, probably the largest single group would be in soft drinks. This is from the University of California, Los Angeles. Quote, published in Journal of Cerebral Blood Flow and Metabolism. A diet high in processed fructose sabotages the brain's ability to heal after head trauma. This was in a laboratory experiment with rats. Revealing a link between nutrition and brain health, the findings offer implications for the 5.3 million Americans living with traumatic brain injury, or TBI. And what about all the people living with stroke? And by the way, 52,000 Americans die each year just from traumatic brain injury. Quote, Americans consume most of their fructose from processed foods sweetened with high fructose corn syrup. We found that processed fructose inflicts surprisingly harmful effects on the brain's ability to repair itself after a head trauma. So that's important. So stay away from all that processed sugar. Now, this is from Linköping University in Sweden, and it was published in PLOS One, a major scientific journal. It showed that selenium, 200 micrograms a day, an amount that we suggest all the time, plus coenzyme Q10, just those two supplements, were compared against a placebo. And they compared it to an inflammatory marker called C-reactive protein. It's a marker of the cardiovascular system. It tells you whether or not, if it's elevated, you could have a heart attack or stroke. You want a low C-reactive protein marker. And what they found was that the placebo, you weren't protected. Selenium and coenzyme Q10, you were protected, and hence cardiovascular deaths in the supplemented group were approximately half the number of those that occurred in the placebo group. So that's important. Quote from the study, "The mechanisms behind this effect is probably the antioxidant effects of both selenium and coenzyme Q10. As previously reported, reduced cardiovascular death has been demonstrated, which is probably associated with the decreased oxidative state in those receiving active supplementation." So, put a win, a check mark beside selenium, and a check mark beside coenzyme Q10. There are over 25,000 additional studies on selenium and coenzyme Q10 in the medical literature. It's been heavily researched. I know a lot of you are consuming more fruits and vegetables than you had in the past. Why? Because you want to be healthier. In fact, just yesterday, a professor from Columbia University saw me having my juice and came over and was asking a question about their own health. And here's what the person said, and this is very typical. "Oh, Gary, I go way back with you. I started listening to you in 1978. Okay. And I listen on a fairly regular basis. Not live, I'm in school, but at night I download your program, listen. And like what you have to say on a lot of the international issues." And I said, "What is the health issue?" "Well, the health problem I'm having right now." And then he went through all the problems he's having. I said, "Well, how in the world, if you listen to me, do you have this health problem?" And he said, "Well, I listen, but I don't do a lot. And since I've been single for a while because of a divorce, I don't eat what I should. You know, I get something from the restaurant, or I throw a frozen meal into the microwave. And I know I shouldn't do it, but it's comfort food and it's quick and it's easy." So I spent about an hour going over the different types of food that he could order from a natural food restaurant, and I gave him five restaurants in the neighborhood, all good, all with good items, so at least he would have a healthy meal that he could eat instead of one of the less healthy meals. And then I said, "How much fruits and berries are you eating?" He said, "Well, that's the problem. I just don't eat enough." And I said, "Well, how often do you have berries?" He said, "Oh, maybe once a week." I said, "Well, you should be having them once a day, even twice a day." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because berries are shown to enhance your motor performance. And at your age, you need an improvement in your cognition." He said, "I could definitely use that." I then mentioned something I'm going to share with you. Tufts University Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging did a really landmark study. And here's the results. Quote, "Strawberries and blueberries may boost brain health by enhancing motor performance and improving working memory. Scientists from USDA and the Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University report that supplementing the diet with strawberries or blueberries also increased hippocampal neurogenesis and the expression of insulin-like growth factor." Quote from the study, "These results also indicate that the diverse polyphenolic in the different berry fruits might be acting differentially to produce their effective positive effects." This was published in the British Journal of nutrition. And then it went on to great detail how you could better walking coordination, better psychomotor skills, a better vestibular system. All these wonderful things were happening when people had more berries. So, we have four ways we can get this into our system and help ourselves. One, each morning have yourself a fresh smoothie. In the smoothie, you start by putting your favorite liquid. Now, I always recommend green apple and lemon juice with some ginger, and about 2 ounces of ginger, 2 ounces of lemon juice, including grating the skin, and then green apple. Then, that's your liquid medium. You could also use rice milk, but it wouldn't be as powerful as the juice. Then put in a full pint of your favorite berries. That includes pomegranates or cherries. All low glycemic diabetics can have this too. Then put in a tablespoon of your favorite nut butter or nuts. Then put in your favorite plant-based protein, split pea powder, brown rice powder, non-genetically engineered organic soy powder, hemp powder. Then put in your vitamin C, generally 1 to 3,000 to 4,000 milligrams, whatever your body's used to, some black cumin seed oil, because a lot of people can't take it. Those of us like myself, I drink it every day, an ounce twice a day. But if you're sick, if you have cancer, if you have diabetes, if you have gastrointestinal disturbance, it's going to be a lot more than that. And that you take under professional guidance. But this way, if you're taking it in a smoothie, no problem at all with digestion. And then coconut oil, teaspoon, flaxseed oil, teaspoon. Now you have one more thing. Put in either green juice or compounding powder with your green vegetables. Now that's the best way of getting it all in your system. And it's easy to digest, giving you your protein, your essential fatty acids, your healthy fats, and your fibers, polyphenols. It's terrific. The second way to do it is maybe you don't want to do a smoothie. You want to do a hot cereal, and that's fine also. Do millet, which is one of the best cereals in the world, and you don't even have to cook it. You simply take some boiling water and put it into a bowl with millet, put a little towel over it, 20 minutes later come back and it's already germinated. It's perfect. It's a living raw food. It's just been heated enough by the hydrolysis, the water, to open up its shell, making its nutrients inside available. And then add your berries to that. But let's say you don't have any berries. Always have in your fridge some concentrates. My suggestion would be have concentrate, which means they've wicked off or eliminated about 30 to 40% of the water. The thicker the concentrate, the better. Blueberry, pomegranate, cranberry, tart cherry, papaya, mango, and bilberry. Those would be the concentrates you should always have. So you put a teaspoon of each one over your hot cereal. Now that's a delicious and cool way of getting your polyphenols in your system. Or the most powerful of all is simply take a liquid medium into which you put a teaspoon to a tablespoon. Tablespoon is going to do you more good, but teaspoon's fine. Of a vegetable concentrate, a powder, or a fruit, berry concentrate, a powder, and drink that down. That is about 3 times more powerful than all the others, but we can't always do the ideal, so you back it down, do what you can, what is practical, what is affordable, and what is feasible. Now, if you're afraid that you won't have time in the morning to do it, make it at night. Have it in the fridge. I make mine once a week. And so in the morning, because I get up very early, I'm at 4 o'clock, and I do my workout, and I come back, take my shower, get all of my post-workout nutrients in. Then I have my concentrates, all powder concentrates, liquids concentrates, fresh, everything, all in one. It's very strong, but then again, I only have to eat one meal a day then. Everything else are grazing, little things throughout the day. Just taking some slices of avocado, putting a little bit of pink Himalayan sea salt, lemon juice first, then sea salt, a little cayenne, and just having a small little amount, maybe 3 to 4 ounces, that's all, of avocado grazing. But those essential fatty acids, the proteins, perfect for giving you another 3 hours before you need to graze again. So a lot of things you can do. But the berries, now the research shows how powerful. The more berries you eat, the better your brain. The more berries you eat, the longer you live. The more berries you eat, the less cancer you have. The more berries you eat, the lower your blood pressure. The more berries you eat, the lower your heart disease. The more berries you eat, the less diverticulitis, less colitis, less constipation. The more berries you eat, the cleaner your blood. The more berries you eat, the more repair of your DNA. So, now I believe that the professor, hopefully, will start to make some changes. It's never too late. And finally, from Texas A&M University and the University of North Carolina, a really good study that shows that plums, dried plums, which were prunes, these are incredibly good at reducing your risk of colorectal cancer. And the plum ends up manifesting a positive effect on the microbiota, which is your bacteria in your gut, and throughout your entire colon. That helps you reduce your risk of colon cancer. So the takeaway message is simple. Quote, through our research, we were able to show that dried plums promote retention of beneficial bacteria throughout the colon, and by doing so, they may reduce the risk of colon cancer. All right. We need to reduce the risk of colon cancers, third leading cancer in the United States. And we have trillions of bacteria in our intestinal tract. And there's over 400 different species of bacteria. So every time you eat sauerkraut or cabbage juice, that's one type. When you eat non-dairy yogurts, that's a different type. So you want to get as many different types of bacteria, good bacteria. When you eat sugar, bad bacteria. Meat, bad bacteria. Chicken, bad bacteria. Alcohol, bad bacteria. So we can save some lives. And that's what we do. Empower people. A few more thoughts before we take our break. This is from Mike Kriegler. Quote, are drones coming to a police department near you? Possibly. Next thing you know, they'll be pepper spraying you. From the drones, from Los Angeles, from Yahoo News, drones are increasingly making their mark in the arsenal of U.S. police forces operating in a legal gray area and sparking concerns of constant surveillance of civilians. And the government agencies can use small drones, and they've been using them for the last 3 years. They weigh about 55 pounds, and they can fly all over the place, and up to 24 police forces are currently fully equipped with drones and trained to use them, like in Grand Forks, North Dakota, Arlington, Texas, Mesa County, Colorado, and Utah Highway Patrol are using them. And now they're going into Houston, Texas, Mobile, Alabama, North Little Rock, Arkansas, Miami-Dade County. So, not a good thing, because there's new technology now, and here's the latest technology. The latest technology is that the drones are so small that you wouldn't be able to see them at night at all. They can fly up to your window. Not only do they have heat sensors, because they can see anywhere you're at in your apartment, they can record everything that's going on in your apartment, and they can video everything through a window. So, do you have any concern that the government, without notifying us, has been spying on Americans for some time? I remember 14 years ago explaining to an audience that the latest research showed that there were vans going up and down the roads, all the streets where a van was, it would go up every street, and from the technology in that van could see you, hear you, and see your image in through brick, stone, didn't matter. Just lead they couldn't, but everything else they could. And that meant that they were spying on just normal citizens living their lives. But then anyone who was an activist, anyone who had stood up, stood out, declared themselves, signed a petition, stirred up a demonstration, those are the ones they were spending a lot of time making sure whatever you were saying, whoever you were speaking with, they already had your phones recorded then. But then they could see you, hear you, and see who you were with, what you were doing. And when we think, we couldn't possibly be a police state. Oh yeah, we've been a police state for a long time. And there's a point where we have to become aware of it. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break, come back, and from that break, we're going to hear about, I think it's important we hear this, about what it is to be an African-American giving their interpretation of their history compared to the whites giving their history in the United States. Back in a moment.
Long, lonely time. Time goes by so slowly, and time can do so much. Oh, you still mine.
Imagine being me. I'm not even sure who I am. I'm lost. All I know is what you taught me, and you taught me I was nothing. Hell, my ancestors created reading and writing, and you told me I wasn't allowed to read. Plus, I was too dumb to read anyway. If you caught me reading, you would kill me and whoever taught me, if they looked like me, because if they looked like me, then you own both of us. And you could do as you please with your property. You removed me from the head of household and taught me that the two things I had of value with my back and this thing between my legs. You made my woman hate me. How can she trust me with her safety if I can't even save me? You decided I could go. You were done with me. But you weren't done with me, nor was I free. I was allowed to go further, but not far enough. So where to and with what? I don't own anything. Not even the clothes on my back. My last name doesn't even belong to me. Let that sink in. I was given this name to show ownership, and I still have this name. So that means every time I felt as if I was catching up, finally gaining ground, you were quick to remind me of the fact that I had a long way to go. I fought in your wars, wars that protected your freedom, before mine even existed. Every year I celebrate July 4th with you. That's your Independence Day. But remember, when you won your independence, it did nothing for me and mine. After you told me I was allowed to read, I had to beg you to allow my child the same education as yours. When you finally granted me that, I had to pray every day that my child would make it home safe. Speaking of praying, I prayed to the same God you pray to. The same one you told me to pray to. And you still bombed my church. Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. I had finally began to pull myself up on my bootstraps. You decided it was time to remind me I only had what you allowed me to have. When I fought back, you went to extreme measures to show me that I could not win. Tulsa became the first U.S. city to be bombed from the air by its own country. This is how far you've been willing to go to show me I was nothing. I am nothing, and I will always be nothing. As time went on, I forgave you. You killed my father, I forgave you. You killed my children, I forgave you. You raped my woman and would kill me for looking at yours, but I understood why. After all, I was nothing. You were something, so I forgave you. You passed law after law with the intentions of holding me down. Finally, in 1965, you tell me I'm allowed to vote. That wasn't that long ago. This car I'm sitting on is a 1965. That wasn't that long ago. When my brothers spoke up for me and said I should have what you have, you made examples of them. Now nobody speaks up for me. And if nobody speaks up for me, then my side never gets heard because I don't have a voice. I don't trust anyone who looks like me because I believe everything that you taught me about me. Last night I sold my mother crack. I made my woman sleep with a man for cash and killed my brother over $53, a pair of sneakers, and a watch. Not because $53 is a lot of money. Not because I really needed sneakers. I had sneakers on. If I didn't have sneakers on, I wouldn't have been out there. Not because I needed to know what time it was. I don't need to know what time it is to know it's not my time. Because he looks like me. And if he looks like me and I'm worth nothing, then so is he. See, I came from nothing. Everything I had, you took it back. As a matter of fact, you telling me that I owe you something. How does the offender become the authority? Your history shows you as a constant rule breaker. So who said it was a good idea for you to start making the rules? See, all I ever done was mind my own business. I was minding my own when you found me. But ever since we met, I've become your business. And business is booming, baby. I'm 18% of the population out here. I'm 60% of the population in there. I can't blame you for not understanding me. The same things you taught me about me, somebody taught you. You've never seen the world through my lenses because you never had to, and that's okay. But don't tell me how to scratch when you never had an itch. Don't tell me how to get up when you've never been knocked down. And don't tell me how to hurt when you never felt pain. You say it's no longer about race. When did it stop? I'm the black man in the wilderness of North America. I'm only what you made me. Please don't shoot.
Now I'd like for you to listen to a different type of clip, but an extraordinarily important one, in my opinion, the movement of all international law away from a group of people who have no defense of their rights, none, not at the UN, nowhere. They are the largest open-air prison in the world, the people of Gaza. Are there terrorists there? Yes. Are there bad people there? Yes. Are there stupid bad people there who do not represent the interests of their own people and will shoot off some rockets, and in return, because they're angry, and then they feel justified in doing so, knowing full well that the response of the Israeli government is going to be kill thousands of innocent people, including over 500 children in the last episode, and destroy over 10,000 homes, making 100,000 people homeless.
In Gaza last summer, more than 2,000 Palestinians, mostly civilians, were killed. Over 11,000 were injured, and entire neighborhoods virtually wiped off the map. For months, disturbing questions have been raised about what really happened when Israel launched its attack, in response, it says, to Hamas rocket fire. Now, an unprecedented report has laid bare shocking allegations about the indiscriminate use of force. Allegations leveled by the very soldiers who were right there on the front lines. Israel claims it always sought to avoid civilian casualties, including by issuing warnings to clear areas. But many of the soldiers say this provided a pretext to indiscriminately open fire on those left behind, even when the targets might be innocent civilians.
הוא לא אמור להיות שם, כי צהל הוריד חוזים לאוכלוסייה להתפנות מהאזור. ואם הוא לא אמור להיות שם, אז אוטומטית הוא לא חף מפשע, ואנחנו רשים באש.
One soldier said his instructions were clear. Any person you run into that you see with your eyes, shoot to kill. Another said the assumption was, the moment we went in, anyone who dared poke his head out was a terrorist. This tallies with Channel 4 News' own investigation into the killing of Salem Shamali, who was shot after getting too close to Israeli soldiers.
If you send soldiers with rules of engagement that anyone in the area, in the zone where you enter, is a legitimate target and he doesn't have to pose a threat to you, the fact that he's there is the threat, you cannot say you've done everything to avoid civilian casualties. It's just a lie.
This report raises some important issues, but there are some additional information to keep in mind. The claims are unbased, unsubstantiated, and unnamed. In order to make a substantial inquiry, we need to fill in the gaps.
The IDF says it's conducting its own investigations to fill in those gaps. But as anger over the devastation in Gaza lingers on, the scale and scope of these shocking new details are already intensifying demands for a major international war crimes investigation.
Now, that the last person speaking was a person speaking on behalf of the Israeli Defense Forces. Lastly, there's been a major demonstration throughout Europe. We don't hear a thing about it here unless we're tuned in to the right sources. For example, million-plus people have taken to the streets in Italy because of the severe European Union austerity programs, where pensions are being cut, jobs cut, and making it easier for people to be fired. And hence, the safety net is gone for a lot of people. And if it weren't for the fact they have large extended families and can get help from aunts and uncles and other people, a lot of these people would find themselves homeless and destitute and starving. Let's listen in to a very short 60-second clip that no one showed on American television, including the alternative media, in the last week that this was happening.
Protests, at times leading to violence, have taken place in several Italian cities as people rallied against the government's labor reforms and austerity measures. Several police officers were injured in the northern city of Padua. Clashes erupted when demonstrators tried to reach the headquarters of Italy's ruling Democratic Party. The biggest rally took place in Milan, organized by two main unions. They oppose the Jobs Act of Matteo Renzi's government, which makes it easier for businesses to fire workers with the aim of making the market more flexible and creating jobs. Now is the time for us to defend labor rights together and call on our government to change direction because it's leading us to disaster. In our country, unemployment is rising. There are no industrial policies. We need investment to create new jobs. We can't just rely on the goodwill of businesses. Meanwhile, people also took to the streets of Rome, where another transport strike hit the city. A group of North African migrants joined the crowd to protest against violence against refugees by some residents of a Rome suburb. Other demonstrators threw firecrackers and eggs outside the economy ministry. Some claims they were beaten by police.
Again, the idea that you have a million people in a demonstration and no one pays attention to it, doesn't consider it essential, is just remarkable. And we have posted all of these up on our website, as we do every 24 hours. We have hundreds of postings, and it's good to see what's going on around the world, progressiveradionetwork.com website. Now, we're going to go to our guests in just a moment. I just want to mention two things before we do. I haven't mentioned it in the rest of this week because I've been so busy on different things, but tonight I promise that those who would like to have a movie and a meal and a movie, we can meet, and we'll do that, and we're going to. So the dinner will be at 6 o'clock. You'll pay for your own dinner, a vegan dinner up on the Upper West Side. Then we'll select a nice art movie, maybe one of the films down at the New York Film Festival, which is at Lincoln Center. That's where I generally go. Saw a good movie last night called The Martian. It is a terrific movie. It's It's one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. Well worth it on all levels. So if you want to join tonight for dinner and a movie, normally I did this historically as a fundraiser, but this is not as a fundraiser. This is for people to meet other health-minded people and enjoy an evening out with people and make new friends. So you'll call 646-926-5422. Now, next Friday night, we're having a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI. BAI, as everyone knows, who listens to it, is in financial straits. It's a catch-22, and it's just very simple. We've had a lot of very bright and professional-minded people who were members of the national board or at the local station boards. We've had an effusive input of positive ideas for how to save and improve the listenership, fundraising, better programming, more meaningful programming. And there's been an abundance of positive input. Here's the problem. You have to have people willing to take that information, these insights, and then apply them, make them real, make them happen. And unfortunately, it hasn't. To the contrary, almost all the people who've gotten the best ideas forward are the ones who are dismissed or even attacked. The people in power have their own agenda. And saving BAI, in my personal opinion, is not what they want, because BAI is worth over $100 million, more or less. If it cannot be managed, becomes insolvent, and then can be sold, then these people can take that money and do with it what they want at the national level. So there's factions, and this dominant faction controls the network, and in my personal opinion, is leading it in the wrong direction. So no matter what we, who want to see the station survive and thrive, want, we're handicapped at every level. So the station just has no audience, you know, doesn't have the money to pay payroll, let alone pay premiums. So it's a catch-22. If you ask people for money for premium, you don't fulfill the premium. They're not, A, it's illegal, but B, more importantly, they're not going to support you anymore, possibly not even listen to you anymore. So to help in this manner, the station manager said, can you help us? And I said, yes. So my new film, Saving the Planet, is going to premiere for the listeners of WBAI next Friday evening at 7 o'clock on the Upper West Side. You're going to get the movie, which is powerful, a discussion afterwards, as well as my newest book, which is 700 pages, and it took 4 years to write this, and it is called The Healthy Vegetarian, Healing Yourself, Healing Our Planet. It's all about veganism. But it's also about saving the planet, it's about disease, it's about prevention, it's about making a difference. And so you get that handed to you, and the publisher is actually going to be there to hand you the book, and plus you're going to get a copy of the film. All this for $49.95, and that's what helps the station, because our goal is to make enough money next Friday night. Nor needless to say, I'm donating my film, I'm donating my time, and helping put all this together, so that the payroll for the last 2 weeks can be paid. Because right now, they don't have any money for payroll, let alone electricity, let alone stamps to mail out premiums, let alone paying the transmitter. They're virtually insolvent. So we don't want it to get any worse, because then it gives the national office an opportunity to pull the switch, turn it off on BAI. So give a call. Our number to call to make your reservation to join us next Friday evening. Let me see what that number is. I'm going to ask. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You're getting an $85 value for $49.95. Just give a call. Let's go out now to Washington, D.C. and say hello to Dr. Mark Weisbrot. As I mentioned earlier, co-director with Dean Baker for the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, specializing in domestic and international economic policy and U.S. economic relations to Latin America. And he's frequently a contributor on economic policy issues for The Guardian, McClatchy's, Brazil's largest newspaper, and he's president of Just Foreign Policy. And he holds a PhD in economics at the University of Michigan and co-wrote the screenplay Tariq Ali for Oliver Stone's film South of the Border. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Gary. Great to be with you.
If we were to believe the reporting on that economic health of the Eurozone in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and other pro-neoliberal mainstream news sources, we would assume that Europe is doing fine. Growth may be slow, but it's stable and improving, and many Americans believe that Europeans are better off than they are, even from the American liberal left. But how much of this can we believe? And before this broadcast, we performed some searches on unemployment rates in the major European nations, and the figures are as diverse as our own, from the official 5% rate to more likely unofficial rate of over 20%, such as in Greece and Spain. And the best we figure we could find out, the European zone as a whole was 11%. Now, Bloomberg reports that the number of people of Italians that are living in Italy, willing to work but not actively searching, is higher than the number of officially employed Italians. And moreover, debt to gross domestic product ratios are skyrocketing. And the International Monetary Fund has warned of gloomy economic times ahead for Europe and the highly susceptible economic shocks that are going to come. But then the International Monetary Fund was fundamental to creating this situation while also denying its role. So what we saw in the market collapse in China is that it sent a ripple effect that hit the U.S. markets. And we can no longer speak of independent national economies since globalization has tied all economies together under an invisible umbrella. So please begin with this, sharing the status of the Eurozone's economic health at this moment. What were the principal failing policies and actions that brought it to this critical state? And what does it mean for the health of the U.S. economy and the global economy at large? The forum is yours.
Yes. Well, I think you can, first of all, you can use the official statistics just like you can use them in the U.S. So it's a consistent series over time. And the U.S. also gives other numbers. So, for instance, you know, the unemployment rate in the U.S. is 5.1%. That's the most, that's the headline rate. But you also have a much higher rate. It's actually called U6 in the U.S., which includes people who have dropped out of the labor force, working part-time because that's all they can find, or otherwise, you know, other workers who are marginally attached to the labor force. So, and then that's much higher. And then, of course, if you also look at in the United States, all the people, if you look at the employment rate, for example, because that's measuring all of these things, all of these people who have are not working but would be if there were jobs available, we're probably down about 3 or 4 million jobs from where we were before the Great Recession. But nonetheless, again, you can use the official rate is not the most quoted official rate is not meaningless. 5.1%, for example, is still considerably lower than the 10% we had at the, you know, in October of 2009 when it was a peak. So if you compare the U.S. to Europe, yes, you can compare the official rates. And yes, the European unemployment rate is more than twice our unemployment. So that is a big failure. And what you asked, you know, why is that? And that's because of a number of things. This is the Eurozone, okay, so it's not the whole European Union. But the European Union is about is a little lower, but it's still about twice what ours is, too. So the Eurozone, which includes, you know, 19 countries, their unemployment rate is so high because they went in the wrong direction. We had a stimulus. It wasn't big enough, but, you know, we had a recession that lasted 18 months, and it was a deep recession. It was a Great Recession, but it did officially end a year, you know, roughly a year and a half after it started in December of 2007, and the Europeans had a similar length recession, but then they had another 2 years. And then, of course, this long-term high unemployment and much worse in Greece, for example, where it's still over 25%, in Spain, 22%. And that's because, very simply, they made it worse. They introduced policies which basically tightened their budgets in a recession and forced and pushed the economy back into recession. And they had also a number of policies that caused enormous instability. And that, you know, especially in 2011 and most of 2012, the whole, you may remember, the future of the euro was at risk. And that, again, was also a result of bad policy. It wasn't really a debt crisis. It's just that the central bank and the European authorities were using this crisis and prolonging it in order to force these governments to make changes that people would never vote for. And what kind of changes are these? Well, you mentioned it at the beginning of this show, what they're trying to do in Italy, for example, the labor reforms, making it easier to fire people, but also a whole set of so-called reforms that include cutting pensions, health care, public employment. You know, that's been cut by 20% in Greece, for example. A whole set of these changes. And so that's why, and this is something I want to emphasize, this because this is something that isn't known in the United States. The first part of what I said, I think you can see that in the New York Times about once a week from Paul Krugman, for example, and other economists who, you know, most economists in the whole economics profession recognize that these policies were wrong. But what I think hasn't come out enough is that there was a very deliberate prolonging of the financial part of the crisis in Europe, the one that we resolved, of course, right away here. They prolonged it for years because they were using it. And I say they, I mean the European authorities, headed by the European Central Bank, the German government, the finance ministers, the European Commission. They actually allowed this crisis to go to the brink of a financial meltdown for 2 years in order to force these governments to make these regressive changes, again, that nobody would vote for. So the Eurozone is kind of a special case, in the sense that, you know, 20 governments fell, and yet they continued to commit political suicide in order to implement these policies. We see even in Greece, for example, where people elected a left government that, you know, ferociously opposed these austerity policies. And then in the end, they caved as well. Because they didn't want to leave the euro. They didn't want to be forced out of the eurozone. And so, and amazingly, they were reelected just a couple weeks ago because they told, they managed to convince at least a fraction, a big enough fraction of the electorate that that they had no choice. So that's the fundamental problem, is that the Eurozone has this structure where the governments themselves have given up their sovereignty over the most important economic policies, and that policy is in the hands of people who are kind of using it as a weapon to transform these economies into something that they want, and that's where you're stuck right now.
Okay. Mark, I have one more question for you. Earlier this week, I gave a report where I showed very specific examples of the amount of debt that different communities have, that corporations have in different sectors, the banking economy, the energy economies, the retail economy. And, for example, between $16 trillion and $25 trillion corporate debt, $47 trillion in government debt, when I brought all the different programs together, $16 trillion in consumer debt. And when you add up all of our debt in the United States, we are incapable of repaying this debt. And yet our growth has been based upon borrowing, 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 and becoming monopolies, smaller businesses being bought by larger ones, et cetera, larger ones being bought by mega large ones. But everyone doing all this through debt. And I believe that we have credit debt at every level, the bond debt, the government debt, state debt, they can't pay pensions. And everyone thinks it's fine. And if you're an average American, because you don't always see the consequences. If you're out of work, you see the consequences. If you're working three jobs, two jobs, if you're not making a living wage, you see the consequences. If you're loaded with student debt, you see the consequences. But a lot of people don't. I believe that in the next 5 years, we're going to see hundreds to thousands of corporations file bankruptcy, cities filing bankruptcies, corporate bonds being worthless, a lot of them, and we're going to see America as an overall economy substantially implode as far as our bubbles go. What are your thoughts, please?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously there are individuals, for example, student debt is a problem here in the United States. It's not a problem for the macro economy. It's not like the housing bubble, where when the housing bubble burst, it caused the Great Recession. So you definitely have debts that are unpayable, but I don't think it's going to cause any kind of recession, or it's a great threat to the economy. And certainly government debt is not a problem at all. I mean, to federal government debt, you know, the way to look at the federal government debt is to look at the burden of the debt. So in other words, how much interest does the federal government have to pay, net interest? Because you don't want to count the interest that it just pays to itself. That's not a cost. And this is well under 2% of our national income. It's closer to 1% of our national income that we actually have to pay in debt service. This is very, very small. It's close to a low for the whole post-World War II period. So there really isn't any reason to worry about the U.S. Federal debt. In fact, the federal government should borrow, because interest rates are so low and zero for short term. They could borrow all they wanted to transform this economy, for example, into a renewable energy infrastructure.
But you and I both know they're not going to do that. If they're going to borrow, it'll be for the military-industrial complex. It'll be to subsidize through tax breaks and givebacks to the major corporations. It'll be to make sure that no major corporation has to pay a penny in taxes. And it will not be to de-ghettoize America or to help the working people. It will not be to get out of the World Trade Organization, NAFTA or GATT. It's all rigged, the entire system.
They're not going to borrow anyway right now, but that's the part of the politics, though, that we need to change. We need to change the politics so that the federal government is willing to borrow for purposes of investment.
Well, then you've got to vote for third-party people who represent the people and not the people who can be bought from by the political machines and corporate machines. I thank you very much, Dr. Mark Weisbrot, for being on. And if people want more information, what is your latest book? Tell us your latest book, please.
Oh, yes. It's called Failed, What the Experts Got Wrong About the Global Economy. And it's available at Oxford University Press.
Okay. Also, the website is cepr.net. or justformpolicy.org. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Sure. Thank you, Gary.
All right. I will do more on upcoming programs of what you can do, the good side of a bad problem. That will be a full hour discussion on the Progressive Commentary Hour, and where I'll show you all the ways that you can get off the grid, still maintain a quality of life, and not lose your life savings, and have a future that is constructive and positive. That'll be an upcoming program. It'll be a one-hour commentary I'll be doing in the very near future. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.